We are live on the World Wide Web. This is the Rubin Report. I'm Dave Rubin. And joining me today is an all-white panel. Very exciting. We've got host of Primetime with Alex Stein on Blaze TV. Alex Stein, as well as host of SossCast and the co-host of the PBD podcast over at Valuetainment, Adam Sosnick. Gentlemen, whiteys, how are you?
I'm good. It's an honor to be here. Thank you, Dave.
I know you had both requested to be with other white people on the show today, and that's why we set this up this way, and I think that'll kind of...
The only people I hang out with these days. It's a DEI reverse dress code. Great to see Alex in his clearly rich chateau villa in Switzerland somewhere.
Well, Dallas, but I'll take it. Thank you. It's not as nice, though, as the PBD Valuetainment headquarters, though, dude. So
we're here. You know. Fort Lauderdale.
We look, the three of us look like long lost brothers somehow, don't we? Like
something's
going on. One guy with a tie, open neck, then the t-shirt. We're just all at different stages of life here.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like we got to get a basketball team together, Dave.
We really do. All right, you guys want to talk about racism and stuff?
Yes, let's go.
All right, let's do it. We're going to talk about racism and stuff, and as it pertains to the mainstream media and the quote unquote comedians who are pushing this stuff down our throats all the time. So as you guys know, The Daily Show is now back. It is only a once a week show, even though they keep calling it The Daily Show. And it doesn't really matter who's sitting in the chair because they just hand them a script and they just read the script. So Jon Stewart is back on The Daily Show, but Charlemagne the God, I have trouble calling anyone God, so his name is Leonard McElvey. He is guest hosting this week, or he guest hosted this week's show on Monday. And he seems to be, he's like kind of getting it about DEI and also not getting it at all. We're going to show you a couple of clips here, including one where he called me racist. Me, Dave Rubin, racist. But here's the first clip where he's sort of getting it on DEI.
Yeah. Y'all cheering out there, but do you want with attitude coming to your office? These right-wingers are crazy, right? Jesus. But here's the part where you all stop applauding everything I say. The truth about DEI is that although it's well-intentioned, it's mostly garbage, okay? It's kind of like the Black Little Mermaid. Just because racists hate it doesn't mean it's good. And you know I'm right, because every one of you has sat through one of those diversity training sessions and thought, this is some bullshit. And it's not just you. Over 900 studies have shown that DEI programs don't make the workplace better for minorities. In fact, it can actually make things worse because of the backlash effect. Remember D.A.R.E. from school? Y'all remember D.A.R.E.? Yeah. She said, woo. DEI training is like D.A.R.E. for racism. And you all know how effective that was. I was sitting there going, oh, shit, there's a ton of fun drugs I should try. I didn't even know about Molly. Thanks, Officer John. But the biggest failure of DEI is that the number of Black people in power at big companies is basically the same as it was 5 years ago. In fact, maybe the only thing that DEI has accomplished is giving racist white people cover to be openly racist.
Okay, so there's a couple things there. First off, I just want to reiterate the point that he's just reading a script. He's the guest host of a show where they hand him a script. These are not ideas coming out of his brain. I don't know that they would have given that exact script to Jon Stewart because they do believe in this neo-racism. But Alex, let me start with you here. He kind of gets it that DEI doesn't actually work, and yet he also, and we're going to play some other clips, seems to think that people who don't believe in it are racist. It's a lot to comprehend, isn't it?
Well, but I mean, he does make a good point that when you make everything about race and gender, that is inherently racist. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you separate us by race, so it's just like, I forget what social experiment they did, was that they went to a school and they said, should there be a special water fountain for Black people? And all the Black people were like, oh yes, that would be great. I would love my own water fountain. But that shows you that's dumb, because that goes back to the whole reason for the civil rights movement is so that we wouldn't be separated into groups. So, you know, it's very hypocritical, but the left is the most hypocritical people on the planet.
Adam, which was the Adam Sandler movie where he had a water fountain with Hawaiian Punch in it? Was that Waterboy? Was it Waterboy?
Bobby Boucher. Everybody knows that's Bobby Boucher. Yeah.
Like, I would like that. I don't know that it would be based on race, but just a water fountain with Hawaiian Punch would be pretty good. But Adam, this endless confusion about DEI, on one hand sort of saying it's bad, you don't get the results you want, but on the other hand saying it's good because, you know, we're thinking about race more. It's just boring to me at this point.
So the most ironic part of this is, you know, there's been a resurgence with the Daily Show now with the reemergence of Jon Stewart, but one could argue that the Daily Show hired Trevor Noah
exactly
as a DEI hire.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrible to watch. And look, we're all comedians, former comedians. I've spent time with Trevor Noah, talented guy, not exactly who we need to be commenting on American politics and society. Mm-hmm. DEI hire right there. So the conversation of meritocracy versus a DEI hire is in full effect on The Daily Show. So, but I will give Charlamagne Tha God credit. He's built up a following, immense following on The Breakfast Club. And I actually would give him kudos for putting in the work and getting to where he's at based on merit. So good for him.
Putting in the work, look at you using their language. Well, speaking of Charlamagne, or Leonard as he's known to some people, he called me racist in a clip that was right after that one. Enjoy.
The biggest failure of DEI is that the number of black people in power at big companies is basically the same as it was 5 years ago. In fact, maybe the only thing that DEI has accomplished is giving racist white people cover to be openly racist.
DEI breeds complacency, Dana, and complacency kills.
We're going to have doctors who don't know how to perform heart surgery, and we're going to have planes that are falling out of the sky.
Boeing recently bragged not about being the best in the business, but about surpassing its diversity quotas. Oh, goody. But then, not so good, a door flying off one of Boeing's 737 Supermaxes.
I'm sorry, if I see a black pilot, I'm going to be like, boy, I hope he's qualified.
I mean, honestly, when I see a black pilot, I'm not worried that we're gonna crash. I'm worried that we're gonna get pulled over.
Okay. 20 writers for that joke. Alex, is it racist to think that the most qualified people should have the job regardless of their skin color? If you want the best doctor, would you not want the best doctor regardless of the skin color, or should you focus on his skin color? Am I racist?
No.
That's basically what I'm asking you.
Yes, you are racist. I want a transgender surgeon on, 10 different antidepressants to do my gender reassignment surgery. No, I mean, you know, the ludicrous thing about Charlamagne Tha God is that is kind of funny, but he makes a racial joke at the end of it, making fun of black people for always getting pulled over. So it's just kind of, like I said to the beginning, very hypocritical. And, Dave, you're not racist for pointing out that you want to live in a meritocracy and not a place where, you know, you get chosen or get a job because of the color of your skin or your gender.
Yeah.
Dave, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Is there a more watered down, less powerful word these days than racist?
No.
Because on PBD podcast, I had a very contentious conversation, argument, debate with Bassem Youssef. And it was obviously about Israel, Hamas, everything that's going on there. To hone in on my point, he called me racist because I was reading stats. I said, what's racist? He goes, your tone is racist. No, your undertone. I said, now my undertone is racist. I said, you know, facts don't care about your feelings, to use a Ben Shapiro line right there. But it's just the card that anybody could use at any given point to admonish somebody or try to cancel somebody. Racist. So it doesn't work and people aren't buying it.
There's also a certain irony here, because in the first clip we showed you, he said that the results of DEI don't work because he's saying there aren't more black executives at these companies. And at the same time, the line he said, talking about me, is that DEI gives racist people cover. But again, I don't want to discriminate against Asian kids who are trying to get into Harvard. That is not racist. But should we show you one more thing from The Daily Show? It's great that they brought this thing back, corporate. Corporate America bringing back comedy. It's fantastic. But as I said, they're a little confused. Like, sometimes they kind of get it right on DEI, and sometimes they kind of get it wrong. They did air this compilation of DEI woke advertisements, and I'll let you make your own judgment call.
Real progress on diversity and inclusion doesn't happen without real work. Say celebrate diversity into your X1 voice remote to discover curated content today.
Every day, General Mills serves the world by making food people love. And inclusion is one of our secret ingredients.
At Kraft Heinz, our purpose is to make life delicious. And we believe we can't achieve that without one essential ingredient, diversity. It's diversity that makes life delicious.
We're on a 400-year-long journey, and scars don't fade. But neither does hope.
So they showed that compilation to show how cringy all of these things are. I know when I'm having my Fruit Loops in the morning, I'm always thinking about whether it was a black man or a white man or an Asian trans lesbian who boxed the freaking thing. Alex, could it get cringier than these ads?
Well, you know, it's funny about these ads, though, Dave, that a lot of people don't talk about. A lot of businesses that are kind of black businesses will actually put white people in their commercials. And then these companies that are mainly all white people will put, you know, multicultural, racially ambiguous people in their commercials. So it's actually kind of used both ways. So, yeah, I mean, it's very woke, and I know we use that term a lot, but yeah, these commercials suck. We don't need an interracial couple in every single commercial that we see on TV.
Sosnick, well, help me with this one, because it is the anti-racists who have taken Aunt Jemima. Everyone loved Aunt Jemima. They took her out of the stores. She's off the shelves, and they got rid of Uncle Ben. So they are, and the Lando Lakes girl. So they've taken all of the people of color off the thing, so now only white people can be on boxes, and they did that in the name of anti-racism. Help me.
What happened to Aunt Jemima? I loved her.
She's gone, man. Now it's the Pearl Milling Company.
Pancakes, waffles, bring back Aunt Jemima.
No, she was racist, apparently.
So, but there's what I've realized. And look, I'm a Miami Beach nightlife guy, got into finance, who got into podcasting with PBD. I wasn't in this DEI, ESG, woke, racist agenda. This wasn't my world. I got thrusted into it. I'm a very common sense individual, and I'm sitting here being like, what is happening all around me? Mm-hmm. But there's corrections, and then there's overcorrections. So, like, as an example, in Hollywood, we start to see things like Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, because they have quotas and basically boxes they need to check. The Seven Dwarves can't even be dwarves these days. Now you need to have a tall dwarf and a black dwarf and a gay dwarf and just a regular and a woman. So it's like, it's counterproductive to what is actually should be going on. Look, I'm all for lifting people up. So as an example, my father was a handicapped businessman. He had cerebral palsy. So he was given opportunities to basically start a business and ingratiate himself with the community. And he was given funding to hire other handicapped individuals. Great. But I don't need those handicapped individuals flying the planes, right? Or running the businesses. So there's an overstep and there's an overreach. Sure, this is the whole conversation about equality versus equity, right? The equality of opportunity versus the equity of outcome. Mm-hmm. So I understand giving opportunity, amazing, but not everyone is the same. And at the end of the day, like Alex said, meritocracy is where we should be headed.
Alex, I feel like you're happy that we're discriminating against the dwarfs now.
Yeah, a little bit now that I'm tall. But actually, you know, a lot of short kings, I respect the short king too. I kind of like the Napoleon syndrome. And most of my friends that are shorter, they do have, you know, the swag that a tall person has. So, no, I like all heights. I'm not a height supremacist. Don't label me that, Dave. Not today.
6'4 right there. Mm. Offensive line.
He's huge. The guy is absolutely huge. All right, let's jump over to some other comedy, again, quote-unquote comedy-related things, because Stephen Colbert, who's basically just a DNC activist, he's a Democrat activist at this point, he doesn't like this Trump guy, and he goes on his show every night to make fun of Donald Trump and alienate half the country and, I guess, get paid handsomely for it. Here's some quote-unquote jokes.
There are more billionaires than ever, even though 32 billionaires died, because... Really? That's really sweet. What a lovely audience we have. Because even for billionaires, the only things certain in life are death and actually just death. Coming in on the list at number 1,438 is Donald Trump, the only billionaire. How did I know that was coming? He's the only billionaire on the list who lists his occupation as Bible salesman, comma, defendant. Wow. Lovely group of people. What a kind and forgiving group of people.
All right, comedy. You know, they throw fish at them so that they applaud properly and all that stuff. But Adam, you're a money guy. You focus on how to build wealth and all of that stuff. Donald Trump, whether people like him or not, and you're not, or at least haven't been a huge Trump guy over the years. This resentment over, let's even remove Trump for a second. This resentment against billionaires and people that create and people that are successful. It strikes me as extremely, extremely dangerous because eventually you do string these people up. And that's what he's kind of fomenting there.
Well, so I think I'm the perfect person to answer this because I was a comedian. I'm actually doing the Miami Improv with Vinny on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
And I was sick of being broke and living on my friends' couches. And I said, let me get into finance and make some money. And when I made some money, I circled back, opened up a comedy club in Miami, which led to getting back on stage, which led to podcasting, which led to social media, which led to PBD. So here's the problem with what's going on with late night comedy, whether it's Colbert, who I think is actually super talented, despite all the vaccine dances that he does. You could talk about that. Kimmel, not as talented. Fallon, super talented. The essence of comedy, and you know this, Dave, is misdirection. Mm-hmm. You saw something coming or you didn't see it coming. Boom, he hit you out of nowhere. Oh my God, I didn't see that coming. The problem with the late night comedy these days is you know where the joke is mm-hmm. headed. You know that Trump is going to be the punchline and it's not funny. So from a comedic standpoint, I just can't take it. And I want to give a shout out to SNL. Like my little brother, who I found when he was 19, is Marcelo Hernandez, amazing comedian. He's one of the new stars of SNL. They've realized they can't keep doubling down on the anti-Trump rhetoric. They can't. So at some point, like from a business perspective, like Dave, you said, they're alienating half the country. It's okay to be anti-Trump if you're these people, but you can't be every anti-Trump voter. And that's the problem. Supply and demand. Last point. That's why Greg Gutfeld,
yep.
who's arguably the least talented, the least funny, the least hilarious guy on late night.
I won't tell him you said that. I'm not telling Gutfeld you said that. That is not nice.
And he's number one.
No, he is number one, absolutely. Stein, well, actually, that's a great point for you because you take the opposite approach as it pertains to politics in your comedy and who you're talking to and the rest of it. Is part of that just calculated market share, like in the Gutfeld sense in a way?
Well, I guess, but really what makes me so mad about seeing this clip is, and I talked about Howard Stern earlier, Howard Stern's our best example, that he used to kiss Donald Trump's ass. Yep. He used to be, oh, yep. Mr. Trump, oh, please come on my show, call in. He would roll the red carpet out for Donald Trump. And as soon as he, you know, ran for president, all of these celebrities, every single rapper that would rap about Trump, that kissed Trump's ass, all of a sudden hated him. So these people don't have a thought for themselves. Stephen Colbert, he couldn't say what he wanted. If he did say, oh, people are getting myocarditis from the vaccine, he's not allowed to say that. He's not allowed to say what he probably really feels. So whether they're talented or not, they are a deep state mouthpiece, and that's why the humor sucks, because it's just not funny when they're just attacking one person and not being self-deprecating, not making fun of Joe Biden, not talking about how Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are on going to Epstein Island and doing Lord knows what with children. You know, I mean, make fun of that. That's what's funny. That's what I make fun of. But you'll never hear that from a real mainstream media late night host when that's what's actually funny, is talking about what's really happening behind the scenes. And, you know, why don't they talk about Joe Biden, his diary, his taking showers with his daughter? I mean, these people would say, oh, well, that's that. I think the Krasenstein brother said, oh, well, a lot of pediatricians would approve young children showering with their dad. You know what? I don't know if that's true or not, but if you're the president and your daughter's writing about how she felt uncomfortable taking showers with you, maybe we should look into that, or at least lampoon it and bring attention to it. And that's what I try to do, Dave, is I'm not even trying to make you agree with me. I'm not trying to make you like Trump. But I want you to ask questions. I almost try to be purposely confusing in my content to try to make people think, is this real? Is this fake? And I think that's the only way you can make a horse drink water. You can lead them to it, but unless you, like, you know, fire up that internal desire to mm-hmm. want to know knowledge, nobody's going to know it.
Stein, to illustrate.
Way,
yeah, go ahead, Adam.
Great, Alex, right there. We talked about misdirection. One of the other things with comedy is a callback. So let me call back one of the things that Dave talked about at the beginning, racism, right? Dave, you just learned that you're racist all of a sudden. One of the things I always say is, it's not racist if you make fun of everybody.
Exactly.
Equal opportunity, equality. It's not funny if you only make fun of one side. So I fully agree with Alex that if you're only making fun of one side and completely missing the obvious hilarity that's going on the left, it's not comedy anymore. It's you're just a mouthpiece for the left, deep state.
To illustrate both of your points quite brilliantly, here is Dave Rubin, who's fantastic, by the way, on Bill Maher's Club Random podcast about a year ago.
That we're supposed to put everybody to bed or whatever it is. They all went bananas left. I mean, Colbert, these guys are terrible. Like, Kimmel to me is just you may be friends with him. I know a lot of people
I
that
am
were.
I
know
I love Jimmy.
Yeah, like he is
Colbert and I are not friends.
Yeah, like those guys to me, they're just the worst sort of partisan nonsense. You want everybody.
But the good part of that is we don't hide it. Like, he doesn't like me, and I don't like him. And we don't deny it, and we don't like it.
No, but he's nothing.
Colbert?
Yeah, he's nothing.
He's also very successful.
No, but he's just giving the machine what it wants all the time. You, for my differences with you, I totally respect you.
That is well said.
Yeah.
Giving the machine what it wants. I wish I had thought of that phraseology. That's exactly right.
Adam, you ever think about giving the machine what it wants for the paycheck? You're a money guy. Come on. The machine, it'll toss you some cash.
Listen,
Colbert's doing okay.
I argue with PBD about this all the time. Everybody has a price. Mm. Everybody. PBD, a man of morals, man of conviction, man of principle. He's like, nope, can't be bought. Okay, maybe you're one of the few, maybe the exception, PBD. Obviously, he's made hundreds of millions of dollars. He's done his thing. At the end of the day, when someone dangles a paycheck or access or status or wealth or opportunity, you're gonna sign on that dotted line for whatever the number is, and you're gonna say whatever the machine or the message wants you to say. So yes, everyone has a price.
I wanna show you guys one other clip from late night quote unquote comedy, because this is Jimmy Kimmel, and Adam, you mentioned how they basically just say the same things and there's no misdirection and the audience just, you know, they're just like robots. It's incredible, hey. So check this out.
This is classic Trump, you know? He stands to make billions of dollars from this deal, billions, but it's not enough. He has to have the other guy's money too. Greedy McGolfi was in Green Bay last night where he was pushing the red hat hysteria of the week.
What the hell was Biden thinking when he declared Easter Sunday to be Trans Visibility Day?
But transgender bad, boo, boo, boo. Of course, President Biden didn't declare Easter Sunday Transgender Visibility Day. It's been on the calendar since 2009 on March 31st. It has nothing to do with the office of the president, but don't let the truth stop you. Go on.
Such total disrespect to Christians, and November 5th is going to be called something else. You know what it's going to be called? Christian Visibility Day, when Christians turn out in numbers that nobody has ever seen before. Let's call it Christian Visibility Day.
Yes, right? Finally, a Christian holiday we can celebrate. I mean, I love that he's somehow the Christian candidate. Trump, not only does he not go to church, he didn't even go to church on Easter Sunday. The Bidens went to an Easter vigil on Saturday night, which, if you've ever been, is boring. That is you really got to love the Lord to go to one of those. While the Bidens were reading the Bible, Trump was out selling them. It's almost too much.
Alex, do they share writers? I mean, they basically just share writers, right?
I mean, you know, it's the same target every time. But honestly, I'm pro Transgender Visibility Day because some of these transgenders, I mean, they are passable as women. So we need some more visibility. If they could wear, you know, like a letter or something so we could know that they're a transgender, I think that would help the dating scene. Or at least on dating apps, you know, Transgender Visibility Day, you know, this is a trans. They need more visibility because they're harder and harder to tell who they are.
Adam, that's not exactly where I was going with this segment, but it's a good point. You're out there. You're out there in the dating pool here in Miami. it's hard to tell who's a chick these days, huh?
Especially in Miami. No, Dave, in Miami, it's crazy. One of my most viral videos on my YouTube channel was a guy hitting on a transgender, and I went up to him. I was like, you know, that's transgender. And the guy had no idea. I'll send it to you. It's hard to tell, especially if you've had seven beers, and it's somebody skinny and they have fake boobs. I mean, what the hell? Anything can happen. The next thing you know, you're with a sweet Filipino girl. She takes off her dress and she's got hanging wang. You know, it happens to the best of us.
Sosnick, personalize this for us, would you?
Well, let me tell you, you know, in comedy, setup, punchline, you couldn't have set me up for a better story than this. Because born and raised in Miami, been in the scene forever, my friends throw an event every year. Was just this past weekend called Model Volleyball. And I have the challenging, difficult job of interviewing all the hottest top models in Miami. Women. And I've been doing it for years and years. The whole Valuetainment team came down. We had a whole setup. And two by two, we're interviewing the models. And I've done it for years. So ironically, it was this past weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And Sunday was Easter, a.k.a. Transgender Visibility Day. So I asked all the models, which one are you celebrating today? Easter or the Transgender Day of Visibility? And each of them gave their canned answers, what have you. This one girl, when I tell you, Dave, everyone thought she was like the hottest chick. Everyone. Black guy Malik is like, that's my girl right there. I said, which one are you celebrating? She goes, well, as a Christian, I'm celebrating Easter, but also as a trans woman, I'm celebrating Transgender Visibility Day.
Wow.
Pause. We all said, what? I mean, you can see this. We just posted it on Sozcast on Valuetainment. Room went silent. I said, what do you mean? She goes, yeah, I was born with male body parts. I'm 38 now, I believe. I transitioned when I was 24, 25. Dude, zero clue that she was born a man. So I was like, all right, walk me through this. I see you. I hear you. Like, I see what's going on here. Shocking. But, you know, there's rules and there's exceptions. This lady was the exception to the rule. We've seen what the rule looks like. Chicks with dicks, chicks with beards, Dylan Mulvaney. Mm-hmm. It's not as female-oriented as it would seem. So it was shocking. Last point, and this is sort of like maybe like a metaphor for where we're at politically and as a culture. Joe Biden, who literally is a Catholic and goes to church every Sunday, from what I understand, this is the difference between the messenger and the message. He is part of the woke transgender DEI crowd, whereas Trump, who for all intents and purposes would rather be on a golf course hanging out with chicks, doing modeling things like that with Melania, is selling Bibles to evangelicals, completely different narratives. So at the end of the day, with Easter versus Transgender Day of Visibility, Trump won this debate.
Well, Adam, as far as that trans volleyball player that you had to judge, I would just say to each his hole.
Ba-dum-bum.
I've been trying to work that one in the show for like 6 years. All right, let's jump over. Let's jump over. We got one more from late night, quote unquote, comedy. This is Jimmy Fallon, and he's not doing just the read and monologue here. Here he is sitting down with a woman that some people say has killed an awful lot of people, Hillary Clinton.
No more Easter Bunny talk. Yeah, I mean it's Biden versus Trump.
Yes,
we know that.
It is.
What do you say to voters who are upset that those are the two choices?
Get over yourself. Those are the two choices.
Yeah, love that.
Right? And, good. You know, it's kind of like one is old and effective and compassionate, has a heart and really cares about people. And one is old and has been charged with 91 felonies.
Yeah, okay.
I mean.
Okay, interesting.
I don't understand why this is even a hard choice, really.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But we have to go through the election, and hopefully people will realize what's at stake, because it's an existential question. What kind of country we're going to have, what kind of democracy we're going to have. And people who blow that off are not paying attention, because it's not like
Trump, his enablers, his empowerers, his allies are not telling us what they want to do. I mean, they're pretty clear about what kind of country they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Get out there and vote.
Get out there and vote.
Which is a good...
Well, that's what this is really about. Get out there and vote.
Alex, when Johnny Carson hosted The Tonight Show, he brought on people of every walk of life, of every political stripe, ethnicity, religion, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't what this thing has become. Is there any way to reincarnate Johnny Carson?
No, that would be great to call Hillary Clinton out, you know, on her history of people dying, literally so many close acquaintances. But, you know, one thing about Hillary Clinton people don't talk about is when she was Secretary of State, she was in charge of killing Muammar Gaddafi and in Libya. And now Libya is the only place on Earth right now where there's an actual slave trade. There's still slavery going on. And this is a decision she made. And not one of these pundits would ever say, hey, what's going on with the slave trade in Libya? Because once Muammar Gaddafi was running the place, they didn't have slavery. Actually, you know, the citizens actually rated the place decent. So my point is she's an actual evil murderer. And I wouldn't even be surprised. I would go so far as saying the rumors of her drinking blood from children and probably you're right. I mean, I have no evidence. Obviously, that's a conspiracy, but she's so evil and sadistic. I would not be surprised.
Adam, would you like to chime in on that? Otherwise, we can get to Stephen A. talking Hillary.
No, I love talking about the hit list from Hillary Clinton. That's like my favorite thing ever. But full disclosure, my best friend, one of my two or three closest best friends, was her South Florida campaign finance director, and I had the opportunity to meet Hillary. I made it out alive, all good. But where I'm at politically, I think is I have the ability to see both sides, say when both sides are doing the good thing or a bad thing, and sort of calling balls and strikes. Not that you're hiring me as a ref or an umpire. But could you, Hillary, listen to me, Hillary, could you be any more out of touch and completely lacking any sort of social cognitive grace? How do you not understand why it's a hard choice? She said, it's not even a hard choice. You lost because you didn't read the room. Trump beat you because you called half the country deplorable. You're basically saying he's an existential threat. The definition of existential is the ability to exist. I think we have 4 years of evidence that Trump has existed, the country existed. It's just so laughable that she just doesn't get it. Does anybody have more Trump derangement syndrome than her? Last point, it just goes to show the movable middle, which you talk about quite often, Dave, right? The disaffected liberals. I don't know if you heard what The Rock said today. He said, there's no chance I'm voting for Biden. We know that Joe Rogan, biggest podcaster in the world, was a Bernie guy 6 years ago, 8 years ago. No chance he's voting for Biden. Elon Musk, definitely not a Trump guy. Now he's definitely not a Biden guy. Even Michael Rappaport, which you saw, I saw the reaction that you did. There's a lot of common sense people that are like, I wasn't on the Trump train, but whatever this Biden debacle is, I'm happy to jump back on the Trump train. So that's kind of where we're at.
Well, actually, we've got that clip of The Rock, and this is, I think it's from this morning, if I'm not mistaken. Let's take a look.
You made that endorsement in 2020. Are you happy with the state of America?
Am I happy with the state of America right now? Well, that answer is no. Do I believe we're going to get better? I believe in that. I'm an optimistic guy, and I believe we can get better. The endorsement that I made years ago with Biden was one I thought was the best decision for me at that time. And I thought back then, when we talk about, hey, you know, I'm in this position where I have some influence, and it's my job then. I felt like that then. It's my job now to exercise my influence and share with this. This is who I'm going to endorse. Am I going to do that again this year? That answer is no.
Did you guys notice that he sounds exactly like Obama? The voice and the affect is exactly like Obama. I just noticed
President
that.
President Johnson at your service, potentially.
Alex, to Adam's previous point about these people waking up that are definitely not, you know, MAGA people, but the Rogans and the Elon Musks and now The Rock and even Adam himself and guys like me who certainly aren't traditional conservatives, you think Trump can bring a bunch of these people truly to the promised land, or do you think they end up either not voting, you know, a guy like Rogan, do you think he'll just not vote again or maybe support an RFK, something like that? Like, what do you think gets them there if that's where they're supposed to get?
Well, I'll say this much. You know, I believe Donald Trump's not perfect. You know, the way he handled COVID, there's some criticisms January 6th. But at the end of the day, I think Trump is the actual populist candidate. And I believe these celebrities would fit in that category. But the thing is, The Rock, I loved him as a kid. He was a great wrestler. But when he was on Joe Rogan's podcast, he didn't even understand how many billions of dollars we were giving the Ukraine to fight Russia. So this guy like claims that he wants to be involved in politics, but he doesn't even know anything about the geopolitical money laundering scheme that's going on that involves the president's son. So I don't really put my hope and prayers into politicians or celebrities, because idolizing a politician or celebrity is like thinking the stripper actually likes you. These celebrities don't like us. The stripper doesn't like us. It's all a scam.
Well, Alex, as someone who has made multiple of the mistakes that you talked about, I co-sign your message right there. But I think there's reading the tea leaves here with The Rock. Famously, you know, during COVID, remember when he looked in the camera and he talked about Trump? Where are you? Where are you? He got all aggressive and mad. Look at his tone now. Mm-hmm. He's a little more diplomatic, and he's saying, you know, I don't think I'll be making that endorsement this time around. I think, as we talk about on PBD, PBD is a big data guy. We now have 4 years of data from Trump and 3+ years of data from Biden. So you can't no longer make the argument of like, what happens if, what hypothetical? We see what's going on. So, you know, the running joke with Trump is, you know, do you miss the mean tweets yet? I think at this point, the country is like, you know what? I'll sign up for more mean tweets if we can get everything back on track to where we were pre-COVID.
So I got one more clip for you guys. We jumped ahead on that Rock clip because you mentioned it, but this is Stephen A., a guy who you sat down with on the PBD podcast last week, Adam, referencing what Hillary said in the clip that we showed you just a moment ago.
Stephen, great to have you on set. So what do you make of that? Get over it?
I don't think it was a very wise statement on her part. How did that work out for her in 2016? I think that's something that we have to recognize. Yes, she won the popular vote, but at the end of the day, she wasn't the president of the United States. It was him. You can look at her not campaigning in Wisconsin in the last days, not campaigning in Pennsylvania in the last days. You can look at some of the stuff that they were saying about her that sort of distracted things from where it should have been in terms of Comey and his report from the FBI. You can bring up a whole bunch of things, but at the end of the day, the last thing you need to do is to do anything that could agitate a potential voter in this particular election.
What do you make about the actual argument that she's making? I mean, she's basically saying two old people, yes, but they're substantively different. I mean,
absolutely,
91 counts against him.
Well, listen. Nobody's brought that up more than me. Four indictments, 91 counts, impeached twice. I'm not voting for him. I've said that to a lot of people. I've said that to you. But at the end of the day, what I'm saying is that at some point in time, you got to take into account what the voters thinking about. The voters, a lot of them out there, tens of millions of them out there, by the way, don't care what he's going through right now. They don't care about his guilt or innocence, his perceived guilt or innocence. They don't care about the 91 counts. They're thinking about their lives. And a lot of times we see politicians taking the positions that they're taking. And while we can respect their candor and their honesty, they do seem a bit detached at times from what the voters are actually feeling and what the voters are actually thinking. Nobody wants to hear that from Hillary Rodham Clinton at this particular moment in time.
Adam, let me jump to you first here because you sat down with him on the podcast last week. But what's interesting particularly about that to me is that he says he's not going to vote for Trump. And I'm sure you guys both saw the clips of Coleman Hughes on The View earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And he also, he rails against the woke and then also says he basically won't vote for Trump. So if we're talking about that group of people that we've referenced already here, where do they go? And does that end us, does that just give us Biden again because they just won't vote for Trump, which is in a weird way why the machine wanted Trump as the nominee?
This is the $1 billion question, so to speak, or you know the amount of money they're going to be spending on advertising for the campaigns, the $100 billion question. By the way, just a little callback fun fact. There is, like we talked about DEI at the beginning, Stephen A. Smith is an absolute monster, incredible what he does, the exact opposite of a DEI guy. He deserves to be where he's at. Meritocracy to the finest. His story is ridiculous. He just sat down with us on PBD Podcast.
Right, he's a great broadcaster, and it has nothing to do with his skin color. Yeah.
He's incredible. What an amazing speaker. I was losing my voice. I'm getting it back now. Sitting down with him, it was like I couldn't have picked a worse day to sit down with an amazing speaker, losing my voice, but we're back on track. But this is the question of our time, because as much as he said, Hillary doesn't get it, wake up, right? You're out of touch. The deplorables, this is the reason that you lost. What are you talking about? Yet he's still not going to vote for Trump. That's the question. So is RFK the guy? Biden's certainly not going to be his choice. He full on said his mom was a conservative. She would vote for Trump. He just can't do it for one reason and one reason only. And he said it because Trump just don't act right. He just, the personality is so over the top that a lot of people just can't vote for Trump. But it's hard to debate with Trump's policies, Mr. Stein.
Well, I'll just say this, you know, it's a very big black pill to swallow, but in the 2020 election, Joe Biden won all 50 states when it came to mail-in ballots, and Donald Trump won all 50 states when it came to in-person voting. So for me, that makes it seem like it's clear that there is fraud in our last election. So I have very little hope. So as much as Stephen Smith can, you know, he and haw that he doesn't like Biden, but he doesn't like Trump, I mean, I think it just sets us up for more election fraud. And I don't trust the system. Call me a conspiracy theorist all you want. I think that we're going to probably get the similar result. As much as I want Donald Trump to be president, I think it's going to be probably Joe Biden, and they're going to use some sort of way to make him win. And that's just how I feel. Maybe that's a conspiracy, but I do believe that.
And by the way, even if there isn't fraud per se, it still leaves us in this weird situation that we're referencing, where all of these people want to leave the Democrat Party, but seem to be unable to get through the force field around Trump, which is exactly what he just laid out there. Sasnik, bring us home.
I've agreed with Alex on everything so far, but I have to give you a little pushback on this one, despite you being 6'4 and good looking and a stud. The problem with pushing that narrative, we've seen a case example of telling voters, don't worry about it. It's already rigged. It's already planned. Look what happened in Georgia with Raphael Warnock, who beat Herschel Walker. It disenfranchised voters to go vote, basically saying the antithesis of what it should be is that your vote doesn't matter. Your vote does matter. Are there irregularities? Are there things you can call out? For sure. Do both sides play this game? I would suspect. But encouraging voters not to vote, I think, is detrimental to democracy.
Well, I think people should vote. Everybody should go vote. I'm just saying, does it matter? We can, like I said, I mean, does it? I voted. I'm sure you voted. And I thought the election was stolen. I mean, that just is what it is. And I think they can steal it again. They've been stealing elections in foreign countries for years. The CIA, they don't care about the president because they know that the president is only going to be the president for 4 to 8 years. The CIA is going to be there forever. So if you know that the deep state exists, which I think you do, I think that they have more power and control than the president or the voters, sadly.
Alex, Adam and I have enjoyed being on YouTube. This is why I'm on Rumble. And I thank you for your comedy. No, I have one final question for you guys. What do two cool white dudes like yourself do on the weekend? Adam, you're here in Miami, the coolest town in these free United States of America. What do you do?
Well, I born and raised in Miami, proud place. I saw the New York sort of like hopscotch, double dutch for years because I used to be in the nightlife. They'd come down for New Year's. We'd sell them New Year's Eve tickets, you know, 100 times X what we would spend on the weekend prior. I almost said inappropriate word right there. We would price gouge the New Yorkers. And I would always say, they come down here, they spend all the money. Why the hell do they keep going back up to New York? I know that you're New Yorker, Californian, all this. But something happened during COVID where they snapped out of it. The free state of Florida, Dave, a newfound Florida man. There's so much to do. The fun, the sun, the beaches, the sports, the women, the men, the trans, whatever you're into, baby. There's a hole for everyone, right, Dave?
And Alex, do they have all that in Dallas?
You know, we have a lot going on in Dallas, but you know what I'm going to be at? I'm going to an LGBTQIA plus Dungeons and Dragons local group. No, this is serious. At our library this Saturday, I'm bringing three guys. We're wearing hidden cameras, and it's going to be insane. So you'll be on the lookout for some wild content on Monday.
I'll probably just be at a regular nightlife lounge club in Miami, but Alex, tell me how the Dungeons and Dragons.
I will. I've never played, but we're about to go get some content. We're about to. It's gonna be epic. Just wait till I get kicked out of my public library. 1 million views minimum.
And I'm gonna be changing diapers. What a world! What a world! All right, guys, it was a pleasure seeing you. We got a post game show in about 30 seconds at RubenReport.locals.com. Part three of my interview with Vivek. I said it right this time. Ramaswamy is up across platforms, full thing ad free on Locals. And have a nice weekend, regardless of the genitals of the person that you're with. Goodbye. 's for tuning in, everybody. Be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. And don't forget, you can watch my direct messages live on Blaze TV and YouTube every weekday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And of course, if you want to connect with me personally and get early access to my sit-down interviews, join RubenReport.locals.com.